You're listening to Road to Black Tech Week, where culture, capital, and creativity collide. In this episode, we sit down with the extraordinary Aisha Bowe, rocket scientist, tech entrepreneur, founder of Stemboard and Lingo, and the sixth Black woman in history to travel to space. Her journey from a 2.3 GPA in high school to NASA to a nearly billion-dollar government contract is not just inspiring, it's transformational. She builds companies, creating generational change, and doing it all without compromising her values. You're about to get a masterclass in mindset, mission, and building on your own terms. Want more great inspiration like this? Black Tech Week 2025 is happening July 14th to the 16th in Cincinnati. Register now at blacktechweek.com. Let's go.
Hello, hello. How is everyone feeling? Black represents the absorption of all light. Black culture is a magnification of that light, the evolving directional code that moves us forward. Black in space represents the unknown. Stars in space guide us to a place we don't yet know. Technology is rooted in curiosity and innovation, a desire to find language for that unknown, to provide autonomy for each of us, to design a path to move forward, to connect to our dreams and to each other. All of us here are a constellation of stars. But every once in a while, when you look into the night sky, a boardroom, a music hall, there will be a star that has its own unique luminosity that makes you feel so seen, that it leads you, it inspires you, it empowers you to boldly step into the unknown, dream bigger, and shine brighter. It is my absolute honor to welcome to Black Tech Week a rising star, a directional star, a North Star, Aisha Bowe. Aisha, welcome to Black Tech Week. How are you feeling?
Amazing after that incredible introduction.
So before we actually get started, I needed to do that. I am very rarely at a loss for words, and I am telling you, researching for this, I was initially intimidated, but the more I read, the more I watched your interviews, the more I realized how authentic you are, how welcoming you are, and how you are really just leading us to be the best version of ourselves. And so all I'm going to do is try to mirror your energy, and I think that we're going to have an absolutely amazing conversation. So let's jump right into it, and I'm going to fangirl a little bit more. You are scheduled to be the sixth Black woman and first Bahamian American to travel to space. You are a STEM philanthropist, a tech diversity advocate. You are a founder of multiple successful award-winning companies. You bootstrapped your first company to millions in revenue. You are a former NASA rocket scientist. And nonlinear plot twist, you almost didn't go to college. Aisha, we would love to get to know you better. Can you tell us your origin story? How did you go from almost not graduating to college to getting a bachelor's from the University of Michigan in aerospace engineering and a master's in space systems engineering?
You guys, I graduated high school with a 2.3 GPA. And what's funny about that is I recently had to order my high school transcript. I know, I don't know why, but they made me do it. And when I got the high school transcript, so many C's, D's, and some really disrespectful F's. I was like, F? It was already a D. Did it really need to go to F? We didn't need to get to F. But when I thought about that, it's so funny how things that seem painful, like you could never really overcome them, become insignificant to what you will accomplish in the future. I didn't apply to college because I had a guidance counselor who suggested that I pursue a vocation. And so I went to community college. And when I was in community college, I was really forced to evaluate who I was and why I thought the way that I did. And this process came about because my first semester, I did not do well. I ended up getting a C in economics, and I was devastated. I was like on the floor crying, thought my life was over, the drama, the whole nines. Like I could have been an actress. And when I sat back and I reflected on this part of time in my life, what I realized was that I internalized anything and everything that someone told me that was wrong about me. I thought it was true. I never stopped to question what they said. I never stopped to question how I felt. But at this point in time in my life, which was a low point, I said, you know, I just want to wake up every single day and I want to look at myself and I want to have pride. I want to live a life that I'm proud to share. And if I was going to feel that way, what is it that I would need to accomplish in order to get there? And so I literally took out a piece of paper, and in my fantasy land, I said, well, I'm going to go to a four-year school, and it's going to be a great school, and I'm in Ann Arbor, Michigan, so it's going to have to be University of Michigan. And if I'm going to go to this really great school, I'm going to do something amazing and awesome, so I'm going to be an engineer. I actually did not intend to be an aerospace engineer. It just happened to be at the top of the engineering list because, A, aerospace is up there. And it also sounded really cool, like, hey, I can introduce myself as an aerospace engineer, rocket scientist for the rest of my life. I'm going to keep that. I'm going to do that thing. And then after that, my goal was to work at NASA. And what I found was that in the immortal words of the legendary Tupac, reality is wrong and dreams are real. And so by having faith in myself, by believing in myself above and beyond the circumstances, I started to change the reality that I was experiencing. I went from community college to aerospace engineering. I graduated from one of the best aerospace schools in the country, and I went and I spent 6 years at NASA. And then I was forced to realize, well, oh, if I could do this, why am I not doing that?
So that line is so poignant. Reality is wrong, dreams are real. So you mentioned that it was a mindset shift that allowed you to go from not being a high school student to now being at NASA. Can you share not only a little bit what you did at NASA, but also, again, rocket scientist, dream job, what then made you leave?
When you find out that the dream is no longer the dream.
Ooh. Can you share some insight for those of us who can only imagine what NASA is like? Take us to what we believe the dream is and then what it is not.
For me, the dream was, one, not being forced to live with my parents the rest of my life. Amen. Praise the Lord. Two, I just wanted to make six figures. I wanted to see $100,000 on my check. And I wanted to have a title. But what I realized was while I loved working for the agency, to this day, I have a wonderful relationship with them, and if you're interested, by all means, have the experience and go. I was relying on other people to reward me for the work that I was doing. And when you're in that situation, sometimes the bar shifts. Sometimes your exceptional becomes their normal. And when that happens, I view this like democracy. If I no longer trust you to govern me, I need to vote for a new candidate. And so I rescinded my vote. I no longer had faith that the government was going to promote me and to develop me. And so I decided that I was going to step in that role and I was going to promote and develop myself.
So you basically, because you no longer felt trust in their democracy, you decided to create your own, to not only be your own candidate, but arguably to create your own ecosystem with which you could govern.
Absolutely. And we all see these things. I mean, I'm not the only person that's seen some questionable promotions at work.
I have to stay in that moment for a minute. What was your strategy for when you left? What were you going to build and how were you going to create a space where not only did you trust yourself, but that the team that you brought on would trust you to carry on a new mission?
It's a really great question because I set out to fix what I saw were impediments to success for the next generation. And I looked at my story. So one, the high school guidance counselor thing. I wanted to have a story that represented you don't have to be perfect to be great. You don't have to have a rich auntie or a rich uncle or even know what it is that you're doing to be successful. And I wanted to have that narrative in high schools. And so my first thought was like, okay, well, I need to challenge what people think when they think about CEOs and business owners and who's out there growing companies and building technologies. So that was my first piece. And then my second piece was when I was at the agency, I would go into middle schools and high schools, and I couldn't even talk about what I was doing because the kids were like, wait, what? Like, you what? No, no, no. Your parents must be smart. I'm like, when I was born, my mom was cleaning houses and my dad was driving a cab. Next question. There's no way you have these degrees. Yes, I do. I actually have them in the trunk of my car because I know you guys are skeptics. I mean, middle school and high school audiences are always my toughest crowds. It's so, you know, they are full of all of these ideas about how they think the world works based off of what they see in TV or media or what they hear at home. And these things are often not true. And so I wanted the company to not only be successful and challenge the way that business owners and VCs and, you know, all of those big organizations thought about who's running organizations, but that made it into middle schools and high schools and challenged those people to think differently too.
So you talk about the fact that oftentimes when we're young, we only know what we see.
Yeah.
And often what we see is on TV or it's the role models we have around us. You have mentioned at length that you didn't necessarily have role models and that you had a dad that was a taxi driver and a mom who cleaned houses. So in the lack of having role models, how has your diversity, how does that direct your diversity strategy in terms of ensuring that everyone knows that this is what a rocket scientist looks like?
I mean, it motivates me. We are all role models. Every single one of you in a seat here at Black Tech Week has somebody around you who you may not even know looks up to you. And it's important for us to share our stories. It's important for us to elevate, to educate, and to empower each other. And I want to stand for that. I want people to go, oh, well, Aisha Bo came to my middle school, or Aisha Bo came to my high school, or, oh, I saw her in a documentary somewhere, and because of that, I think I can. No, I know I can. And I did.
I absolutely love that. I'm going to move a question forward. She just dropped a bar on you guys without you realizing, possibly. So you mentioned a documentary. So I would be remiss to not bring this up. So you are featured in a documentary, In Her Element, that is produced by Reese Witherspoon's production company about emerging, dynamic, amazing women in tech. Can you share a little bit about why you did that and why you think it was necessary for you to be a part of that project?
Well, at first I thought they had the wrong person. So I had to go to the interview because I was like, this isn't real. This email's not possibly right. And then I was sitting in the interview and I'm like, how many black women, how many people of color around the world are gonna see this? Because Hewlett Packard bought the film. Because they're the ones who said, you know, we're gonna push this to all of the major markets. And then they turned around and released a free version on YouTube. I wanna be part of that. I want people to see us too. And so, it's just been an incredible experience. It was actually screened in the Bahamas Film Festival this year, and I had an opportunity to go to the Bahamas and see it. My family's from the Bahamas. But I also was on a US speaking tour in Kyrgyzstan, and they also played the documentary. And so I'm really excited to see stories of us in mainstream Apple TV, Roku, YouTube, that people can access around the world where they really need inspiration.
I think that is amazing that you are using the power of technology and entertainment to amplify your vision and your mission. As an entertainment attorney, I have to ask this question. Are you possibly thinking of co-producing a film based on the totality of your life to actually further amplify? That was just, I had to do the plug, you guys. I had to.
Maybe, possibly, hopefully. I'm like, if that's something that you do, like, get at me.
Okay.
I really would like to, especially with the upcoming launch. One of the things that I was able to do, because lawyers are amazing, was negotiate the rights to the footage of my journey for the flight. And so now I've got to decide what to do with that, how to turn that into a project.
I absolutely love that. So it seems, no, it is evident that you build on your own terms in everything that you do. Can you take us a little bit more inside your strategy as the CEO of Stemboard? Specifically, how do you build on your own terms? And no, let's start there. How do you build on your own terms, and how does that affect how you lead and you run your companies?
When I started Stemboard, I went out to raise capital, and I did not have a great experience. I wouldn't say that it's a joyful process for most people, and so I'm not the only one that has found it to be challenging. But it really forced me to think about how I was going to not only found but scale a company that was sustainable. And what I realized was I did not know what I was doing, and I was willing to invest in learning. I wanted to almost get a master's in how to be a business owner. And so over the course of 5 years, I made a lot of mistakes. I interviewed other business owners, and I took Stemboard initially from a business where I was literally talking to a dog that I was dog sitting because I couldn't afford rent, to a company that made Inc. 5000 list of one of the fastest growing companies in America. And that company I own outright. I don't have a board of advisors. I don't have anybody to answer to except for like me and God, and you know, maybe I'll talk to my parents about it sometime. But why that's important was I made a deal with all of my employees that we were going to donate a portion of the hours that we generated, our billable revenue, to building educational programs for the community. And we did that for 5 years. We have amazing partnerships with organizations like InRoads, and we ended up growing academic programs in nearly every major market in the U.S., that were designed to empower students of color to teach them engineering and entrepreneurship. And I wouldn't have been able to do that had I focused on just the sole VC model. And I realized when I was doing that I needed to be able to share that. Some of you may have seen in the media that we recently won a contract worth $947 million. That came from me saying, I'm gonna put all the traditional business knowledge to the side, and I'm gonna build an aerospace and defense company. I'm gonna demonstrate that we can operate at these elite levels in the government, and that you can make tens of millions of dollars a year doing this, and then I'm gonna recycle that money into the community, and I'm gonna allow that work to stand on its own.
Woo! I need to double back to the contract that you were just awarded. Again, $947 million, which is just shy of $1 billion. To this audience of individuals who are presumably startup founders, can you go into the nitty-gritty of why you decided not to take outside investment for Stemboard and the direction you went to now get to having a almost $1 billion contract? I think if we could just have a masterclass in that, I think it would be invaluable.
I would have liked to have accepted startup money. However, they were not necessarily willing to give it to me at that time. So, hey. But I'm actually really grateful for that, because it forced me to think about how you can run a business that's sustainable. And when I looked into the landscape, I realized that the same engineering mindset that I was applying to grow a product company, I could use to grow a service company. And so I started bidding on contracts. I was literally in my room just writing proposals, and the proposals were like not very good proposals. I've gone back and looked at them, and they weren't very good. But I was trying, right? I was learning the process. And there are a lot of areas where even if you are a startup founder, you can de-risk the way that you set up your revenue by looking to work with state, local, and even federal governments. The United States of America is one of the world's largest buyers of stuff that buy everything from toilet seats to jets. There's gotta be an area there for you. And when you work for them, the contract isn't a year, it's 5 years. I have 5-year in duration contracts. That is a lifetime. As a business owner, I can plan, I can be strategic. This contract that we were awarded, we prepared for 3 years to win that award. We started out with 2 years of getting certified, doing the research, talking to the government offices who were in charge of the contract. That takes time, and so that's a little bit different than trying to kind of figure out how to make payroll. But my suggestion would be to look at a lot of these government and local and state opportunities, because they actually have offices that they pay to help you. They actually are incentivized to include you. They actually have a business reason to bring you in, whereas that may not be the case in some of the product-based environments.
That's brilliant. I love that you took something that could have been a problem or a pain point, that it seems like you have a tendency to take your pain points and you lean into the divine to find a solution. You have spoken at length about the power of faith, that building on your own terms requires faith, because oftentimes there are naysayers saying that you can't do it, that this is not what a rocket scientist looks like, that this is not what a founder of a tech engineering consulting firm looks like. So I am assuming, based on what I've read about you, but is it fair that faith is an important part of your life? And if it is, can you share with us how that helps you in your entrepreneurial journey, both personally and professionally?
Being in business, I have found that oftentimes the universe, God, whomever it is that you believe in, will put your name in rooms that you could not have possibly entered. And it's often those moments that change the course of your life. For me, when I look back on the entire journey from being in community college to being now, there's different levels of faith. First of all, faith in oneself. I had to learn how to trust and believe in myself, which I really would love to go back and restructure high school. Like, can we include that there? Like, teaching people how to believe in themselves. And by taking that faith, as much as I love my family, they were not a fan of starting the business. They did not see people who operated like me, and so they couldn't conceive of an environment within which I would be successful. However, my mom is actually an employee in the Lingo company, and she's employee of the month every month.
Was she always on board? Can you share with us a little bit about how that transition happened? And how should we deal with potentially loved ones not understanding our dream?
You have to find your tribe. And the good news is that you're surrounded by people who can support you and who can become your community. Like, you are in the right spot here at Black Tech Week. Pretty much nobody thought that I was going to finish college. I mean, my friends at the time, I can remember being like, oh no, I really don't think they're gonna accept you. Oh no, because they're operating on old programming, right? They're operating on a set of rules that were told to them in high school or from wherever that are true sometimes, kind of often, but not always. And once you decide that you're gonna live a different kind of life, a life where you believe in yourself and you believe that you can transcend, not everybody's equipped to come on that journey with you. So you have to find the people who believe, the people who want to be poured into, the people who want to pour into you, and then allow the rest of the world to watch.
I love that. Trust in yourself and allow the rest of the world to watch. Whew. I need to dig a little bit deeper, because you reiterated that in high school, you had friends who also didn't believe in you. And again, I'm still stuck at this story of someone who was getting C's, D's, and disrespectful F's to now being this dynamic woman here on stage. And I know I suffer from imposter syndrome. And I was wondering if in that journey, because you didn't start off being confident, do you ever have moments even now or throughout your journey you felt like an imposter? And if you do, what is your recommendation for us? And if you no longer, what is also your recommendation for us to get on the other side of it or to carry it?
I struggled with imposter syndrome for like the first 3 years when I started working initially at NASA. And I would go into these meetings and I realized that the imposters don't suffer from imposter syndrome.
Ooh, can you repeat that?
The imposters do not suffer from imposter syndrome. They do not. But yet here I am, afflicted. Meanwhile, you're over there saying something crazy in this meeting and no one's checking you. And after seeing that, you know, I have a saying to my team in both of the companies, and I'm like, what would a mediocre man do right now? Like, it's a bracelet. We need to make it a t-shirt. And it's like, every time we need to make a decision, I'm like, what would he do? He would raise the price. Let's raise that price. Because we have to start thinking that we are worthy, that we are good enough, because the people who are not do not think that, only us.
Oof. I feel like arguably the title of this conversation is Build on Your Own Terms, but I really think that what we are experiencing is a masterclass in shifting one's mindset, a masterclass in trusting oneself.
Absolutely.
And throwing out this concept of what perfection looks like. When we really just need to look at ourselves. So as you look at yourself and as you look at this journey that you are currently on, we are about to go somewhere where very few of us have gone. And I need to make sure that I get this right. Mae Jameson, Stephanie Wilson, Joan Higginbotham, Jessica Watkins, Dr. Cyan Proctor, and Aisha Bow. You are scheduled to be the sixth Black woman, the sixth Black woman to go into space, to cross the Karman line, to literally bravely go where no man has gone, or woman. I had to do it. How are you feeling? Share with us. We need to be there with you. Share anything that you can about this experience, that you are about to be not only a rocket scientist, but an astronaut.
I'm thrilled. I'm excited. Those are some amazing names. Those are the people who are my role models. But I'm also determined. I'm determined to bring the concept of African-American women and people of color in technology to people's living rooms, because we in those spaces for so long have not been seen. And I am delighted that there are girls and boys too, all over the world, who are getting inspired by this mission. The second business that I founded, it's called Lingo. It's a self-paced coding kit that teaches students engineering subjects at home. And in there, we actually baked in lessons that were taught by African-American females with computer science degrees, because when I was going into schools, these students were not learning anything from an African-American woman from a technical background. It just wasn't happening till later on, sometimes in college, but most often not. And so the idea that there are going to be millions of people around the world who are going to say, wow, she's like me, and oh, she wasn't perfect, and oh, she did this, is really exciting to me, because I want to be part of inspiring the next generation. And I also want to give them the skill sets that they need in order to go and do the same thing. The greatest compliment that you can give me was, hey, I learned about your story, and I looked those things up, and I did it too. Because I want all of us to be successful.
I think that is so powerful, and I had to get up and grab the actual Lingo box. And the reason I think this is important, because I think that it does two things. You have said that tech is a lingo that leads us into the future. And that we are literally holding tech in our hands. That it can empower us to have sustainable careers. Mm-hmm. Can you share with us not only our continue the conversation about why STEM in particular is a great democratizer? Let's actually start there.
I believe in the future, a college degree will not be necessary unless you want to be a doctor, a lawyer, or like maybe a rocket scientist. But most of the skills that you need to know to be successful can be learned either from a community college environment or from restructuring of a high school setting. And so for the Lingo Kits, I wanted to be able to provide something that was self-paced, something that built confidence in students who may not have an opportunity to build, but that also pushed them to think about how to apply their skills to generating revenue. And what I found was that we were taking these kits into like Title I schools, and the students were turning around and they were building companies and they were emailing me about it. And that to me is the future. More people who are generating revenue, who don't have to worry about the burden of student loan debt, who can make the decisions that I have made to create this kit. The initial kit wasn't venture-backed. I made this with the money from STEM Board, and I gifted it to the new company, and then I went out and I raised money and was like, look at what we did. We built a product that was on Amazon, that was in Target, and that was sold in Walmart before you thought that it should get a single one of these dollars. We already had serviced thousands of students, and last year we serviced 6,900 students in nearly every state in this country. But not a single VC dollar was part of the initial creation of it because they did not think that there was a market for minority student STEM education 13 plus. And so I did that on my terms. You don't believe there's a market? I'm gonna show you there's a market.
Don't tell show. I'm gonna go one step further. We had a conversation in the green room and you shared with me how what you have built with Lingo is filling the representation gap.
Yeah.
That there is a lack of Black and brown teachers of technology. Can you share how in particular this is bridging the gap in the school system as it relates to the lack of representation of Black and brown teachers?
Yeah, I'm proud to say that we have a very diverse clientele who support Lingo. And I'm talking the spectrum from like a Leidos, multi-billion dollar defense company who worked with us to put Bubba Wallace on the box. We really created the first Wheaties box of STEM, an African-American NASCAR driver on the box being delivered to students in Alabama so that they could learn about biometric sensing in their high school classroom. But we also have charter schools and other schools in more affluent areas who teach our box. And they teach our box like eighth grade and ninth grade, right? Really younger ages. And for many of those schools, they don't have a single person of color on their technical team. And they started writing me to say, you know what, Aisha, we may not be able to go out and find a teacher to come in and teach this, but we can actually give this instruction to our students because we have your box. And it's important for their traditional students to know that there are people of color who are as capable, if not more capable, teaching them through this tool. And that's how we've been used. And students who are in our Title I areas, they may not have access to the same opportunities. And so it's really cool for me to see like super affluent districts using us as a way to increase representation because that matters. And students who are in Title I schools being inspired and receiving the exact same level because we've aligned it to state learning standards and the school can say this is something that we're supposed to be teaching them. And so we're gonna bring this in and support it.
I absolutely love that. I absolutely love that you are creating solutions to fill gaps instead of just talking about the gap. I have to go back to space. So one question is, are you afraid?
Yes, I am human.
How are you dealing with that fear and how are you preparing? Do you have a schedule, a routine, or are we not there yet?
Well, I'm supposed to be watching my diet, but that's not going so well. I see it, I eat it, I want it. First, I'm working to align the outcomes of this mission with long-term interests. A couple years ago, I started an endowment at the community college that I went to that was designed to support students' matriculation to a four-year degree. I funded that through donations from companies and organizations and through public speaking. I've started to finish that work by adding on an endowment at the University of Michigan, which I'm in the process of finalizing And the reason why this is important to me is that there has to be a long-term strategy on how we take money out of education. Because there's no lack of talent, there's lack of resources. And if I can use this mission to say to people, I'm gonna make sure that people of color always have a free ride at Michigan Aerospace, and then you guys can use that as a model to start endowments at other schools, then that's how we're about to do this. And so my focus is on the strategy, it's on the legacy building things, the organizations that I can align myself with, the people who will allow me to come to talk to them, to share the message, and who also wanna support funding, endowments, and opportunities to create awareness around other programs and scholarships that can be used to have long-term systemic impact.
That is dynamic that as you are going into space, you are still looking beyond, and that you are looking to ensure that your legacy looks like you and the broadest diaspora of what it looks like to look like you, to be black and brown in these spaces and to take up space. 6 months after you get back from space, what's your mission? What's next? You have spoken at length about drawing out your life, that your mindset shift is a vision board or writing out. Do you have a new vision board? Do you have a new dream life, dream bigger? And if you do, what does that look like?
There's this amazing masterclass on like mind mapping. And actually, for New Year's, I like to ring in New Year's with an accomplishment. So I usually sit down and do something productive. And I watched this masterclass. And I literally drew out this map with pictures and objectives in different areas of my life. And what I view as the next step is I want to create a venture capital fund that's focused on the Caribbean. I right now have operated free STEM camps for the last 8 years in the Bahamas. I bring in students from all over the islands who are not interested in math, who are not interested in technology. I toss them together, I challenge them to create their own companies, and I provide small amounts of seed capital so that they can develop their idea. I'm looking to scale that. I wanna create more companies. I wanna put more money in that, and that's one thing that I wanna do. But also, I'm looking at education. I want us to breed doctors and lawyers and judges the same way the Republican Party looks at Supreme Court judges, right? Ooh. I want people to think about how do we work together to make sure that there will always be a long line of people who are like Aisha Bowe or who are like Everett, right? Because they have the resources, they have the right internships, they have the support. And like that type of work, that's life's work. That takes a long time. And in order for me to do that, there needs to be some kind of liquidity event. So I'm gonna sell something here in the next few years. So I gotta work on that. Been trying to kind of think about that, you know, shout out to Wells Fargo, JP Morgan, middle market for helping me figure that out. But I'm like liquidity, investment, infrastructure, inspiration.
You mentioned a masterclass in mind mapping. And I think it is obvious to everyone that I'm trying to get right into your brain because this right here is the mind mapping. We are talking to innovators and change agents, and what advice would you give to black and brown startups of how they should structure their company and align their personal mission with that of their business?
I'm not sure that I can advise on structure, but what I would say is that I think it's really important to know your why and make sure that that why is reflected in what it is that you do. I do not lose energy for any of the things that I've mentioned to you because I know what it's like to be broke, I know what it's like to be hungry, and I know what it's like to be without hope. And I'm not going back to that, and I don't want anybody to go back to that. And like that's my compass. That's where I work from every single day. I understand the importance of challenging boundaries because people in high school are writing me. Even adults are like, I FOMO your career. I'm like, why don't you get out there and do something, right? Have the courage to break away. And I get that it's not for everybody, but I I wake up every day with a really strong understanding of who I am and why I am here. And because the company is carved in my image, it is successful. Both of the businesses, they're direct reflections of the things that I think that I'm put on earth in order to solve. Technology, education, access, opportunity. That is what we do. Both businesses. And they have thrived even when on the face of it, people may have thought that they could not, because of that passion and that purpose is also reflected in the people who work in the organization.
You mentioned the people who work in the organization.
Oh, yeah.
and ensuring that you are building something that is a reflection of you. How did you find people that were reflective of your vision and trust them enough to walk this path with you?
Oh, wow, such a good question. I found that we found each other. So Stemboard is about a 40-something person company, full-time, like, you know, 401k, health benefits, all that jazz. It's fairly a solid business. And what I realized was that the first thing that I had to do was make space for other people's gifts. I call it 80-20. I hire you for the 80%, but I allow you to express the 20%. And by letting people know from the beginning, like, I do not have all the answers, I'm more than happy for you to tap in, raise your hand, and save the day, it creates an environment of trust. Yes, I'm responsible for the paychecks, but we are all responsible for the success. The other thing with that is I found that when you know your why, it resonates, and people can feel your passion, they can feel your purpose. I have an amazing team at Stemboard, many of whom came from really exceptional, well-known brands and organizations, but they may not have had the opportunity to come as their authentic selves to work. And because I made space for that, I employ a company that is 51% veteran and 47% women. We do not have diversity issues in Stemboard. We do not have issues with people feeling appreciated because that is who I am and I created that. And so people came from more prestigious organizations to be part of something that could be used as a model for these other companies.
I love that because you walk in your authentic purpose, you are building a company and a space for people to do the same, to then also potentially show all of us that we can build on our own terms. Is that fair?
Yes, it is.
I would love to give the floor to you. Is there anything else before we close that you would like to share? Or is there a call to action that you would like anyone listening, a call to action for any that they should do? Or also too, how do we support you and your mission to make sure it fully comes to fruition?
Well, the one thing that I want to leave the audience with is that you all truly are role models. You are the future, and I want you to show up as that every single day. The second piece about support, I want to make sure that we have all of the strategic partners that we need on the Lingo side of the house to be successful. I want to make sure that students do not leave high school without these hands-on skills and that we are represented in high school, because for me, I didn't have that experience. I didn't have any people of color teaching me anything technical, and had I, maybe I actually would have been further along in life because I would have maybe come to this career sooner.
I need to echo that. I think that is such a beautiful way to view it, that you haven't even reached your pinnacle, and that arguably if you had had the support earlier, you were humble enough to know that you could be further along, and that rocket scientist, lawyer isn't even the top of the ceiling. If we are given everything that we need, it's somewhere out in the unknown. Can everyone put their hands together? I think I am at a loss. You are a cosmic angel. Thank you for building on your own terms. And thank you for showing us what it looks like to trust in oneself. Thank you for showing us what it looks like to have not only ownership of a company, but ownership of self. And that this is what a rocket scientist looks like. This is what an astronaut looks like.
This potentially is what the owner of a black tech unicorn looks like. Thank you, Aisha Bo, for sharing the Black Tech Week stage. Thank you for so authentically sharing who you are. And I, for one, will be following you into space and anything that you do in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Aisha Bo, astronaut, innovator, and architect of possibility. Her story reminds us that your past doesn't define your potential, and that faith, focus, and a fearless mindset can take you beyond the stars. If you were moved by this conversation, subscribe to Road to Black Tech Week, rate the show, and share it with someone who needs a reminder what they're capable of. Join us at Black Tech Week 2025, happening in Cincinnati, Ohio, July 14th through the 16th. Learn more at blacktechweek.com. Until next time, build boldly, live fully, and dream beyond gravity.